What is up, Mentors Collective? Welcome to another awesome episode. And if you are a agency owner, a business owner, anyone who's having trouble scheduling calls, booking leads, selling services, believe me, this one's going to be an episode that's going to produce a lot of money for you. So put everything else down, turn up the volume. I've got a really respected expert with me to discuss one of my favorite topics as an agency owner myself, who's scaled to 50 plus employees, over $4 million a year in revenue. You have to be able to keep your sales team's calendar booked. And when you're just starting, sometimes that can be tough on a limited budget. So in this episode, you're going to learn how to keep those calendars booked on a limited budget and get the scaled up as your team starts to grow. So I really want you to pay attention and thank my esteemed guest, someone who I highly respect in the B2B lead gen space. There's not that many great people out there. This is one of them. So without further ado, Nick, I want to welcome you to the show and thank you so much for donating your time to me and my audience. And I expect to have a super fun tactical conversation with you. Welcome, brother.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to speak about lead gen and everything cold email related.
Same here. And for those listening, Nick runs a very successful lead gen, a B2B lead gen company, and also owns several different SaaS platforms that help companies with lead gen. So this guy's the real deal. He knows his shit, and you're not going to be getting any second or third hand knowledge right now. This is going to be it. So Nick, talk to me about B2B lead gen. When you're first starting, when you're talking to a startup, where is a good place to kind of start? What platform do you use? What are the pieces that you need to have right so that you can keep those calendars booked?
Yeah, so I think it really kind of depends, right? So like, you know, when you look at a startup, there's two stages, right? There's pre-product market fit and then there's product market fit, right? So, you know, when we have a lot of clients that are pre-product market fit, you know, there's a lot that goes on in the testing side, right? And it's more about on the data side. We got to scrape tons of different verticals. And so my favorite places to kind of build lead list, it's ocean.io. It's a really new enterprise type software. It's probably, you know, what I see overtaking ZoomInfo possibly in the future. Everything else is way beyond ZoomInfo. But other than that, the things I love to use to kind of send out emails are obviously the platforms we built out. So everything from ME to do the email outreach, Inboxy to do the email warm-up, Quick Lines to do the AI personalization, Scrubby to do the email list validation. That's the tech stack we use for anything B2B lead gen related.
Beautiful. And let's take a step back, because I agree. We scaled our company on cold email. You know, we were a startup. We didn't have funding. And if it weren't for cold email, I'm not sure we would have been able to get to a point where we could start investing money in certain tests for like advertising on Facebook ads and YouTube ads and Google ads. And those are expensive. You know, we pay $250, $350 per book call when we're doing it on Google search ads in some cases. So cold email, I think if you can master that when you're in that startup phase, you're going to have an easy time scaling. And you just mentioned a lot of different points that kind of cold emailers have to have tapped into if you're going to be successful. Data was one of them, validation, and basically all the tech stack that you built for yourself and for other marketers. So let's dive into a couple of those, and we'll start with kind of an overview of cold email and what you need to have in place.
Yeah, go ahead.
Data. Let's start with data. Ocean.io is this. I've never heard of it, so I'm pumped about this. I can't wait to dig into this. We use Apollo.io. We're grandfathered in, so it's relatively affordable for us. But talk to me about data. Why is data important? Yeah. How do you use it?
So, you know, when it comes to building lead lists, where, you know, I mean, like if you think of just like overall cold email campaigns, the ones that work the best is when it's relevant and you know, possibly have a case study that's relevant to the person receiving the email, right? And so, you know, building account lists that are super specific, those are the ones that work the best. And so that's what Ocean helps you do. Because most people, you know, they use the tags within like, you know, a typical database like Apollo, right? But the thing is Apollo, ZoomInfo, all these other databases, they have, you know, almost billions of data points in there. And so they're always going to be off when it comes to their tagging and their filtering, right? And so that's why I don't like to like build my lead list using the filters within a database, because those tags are typically going to be a little bit off in certain verticals, in certain spaces. It just all depends, right? But Ocean, what Ocean does is, let's say, for example, you tell me that Leadbird is your ideal client or is a client that you have a crazy good success story with. You plug Leadbird into Ocean, and what Ocean does is it actually builds an AI account list according to like other accounts that are similar to what you plugged in. And so this helps a lot in terms of building like the the perfect ideal, like account list. And an account list is just, you know, a list of accounts, list of like, you know, companies, right? And then what we'll do is we'll take that list of accounts and we'll put it into something like Apollo, or we'll just enrich it inside of Ocean or ZoomInfo, or, you know, just kind of depends on who we're targeting, because some databases are better for, you know, certain industries, right? And in those databases, we'll enrich it for the contacts. So we'll, you know, pull the head of marketing, the head of growth, or just multiple decision makers in the marketing department, things of that sense. And so that's kind of like our lead list strategy process for, I would say, most spaces in the B2B.
That's an interesting way you can kind of filter data by companies who are similar to ones that you already know are working and good clients for you. We've never done anything like that, so excited to dig into that. What does a tool like that cost? Just to put into context for listeners.
Yeah, so Ocean, it's enterprise software. So I believe they start at $12K annually for their starter plan, and they only sell annual plans, if I'm correct. I think our renewal is actually coming up, so we'll figure out what their next pricing option is. I'm sure they've probably increased their prices. I think they just raised. So that's definitely something that's going to be happening.
Hopefully you're grandfathered in.
Yeah,
that's not cheap. That's similar to ZoomInfo. So definitely something for more advanced marketers, or they can't imagine a lot of startups digging into that. And I think Apollo.io is around that price too now. If you're able to get in on the ground floor with one of these new companies and they grow and they get better and better, you're in a good spot. Have you used 100%. any other data platforms for your data in your years? And what are your opinion on those?
Yeah. So one thing I've actually just been testing is, so like, you know, once again, like I'm super, super big on just making sure that the lead list is like super accurate. Like accuracy is the biggest thing when it comes to like building a lead list. So there's this new tool called Evaboot, and it's basically a LinkedIn sales navigator's framework. And so this is way more affordable. I think like for 20,000 leads, it's about $90, something like that. Nothing enterprise-y, but The value prop with Evaboot is that it'll scrape your LinkedIn sales nav search. And the issue with LinkedIn sales nav search, just like I mentioned before, you know, if you put in, like today, I was literally using it and I put in a search to find a very narrow list of CPAs, and sales nav, like on like the 10th or 11th page, would give me people that, you know, aren't CPAs. They might work at like a CPA firm or have in the past as like an assistant. So a lot of people that just don't fit that like exact job title, even though I'm putting in the job title, just CPA. And so Evaboot, once it scrapes LinkedIn, what it does is it does like a cleanup, or I think that's the what it's called in there. And it'll literally remove all irrelevant like people or leads from that lead list to kind of build that exact lead list. And so that was like something I thought was really cool. I think, you know, about 2 to 3 years ago, the game was all about like, you know, where can I get the cheapest and most amount of data and just like kind of go crazy with it. But I think as cold emails and just outbound gets a little bit more competitive, I think where you can get that competitive edge is like just building out a very detailed lead list that's like super on spot with your ICP.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And there's, you know, cheap tools out there right now. We're experimenting one, leadrocks.io. I think we got them on AppSumo. It's brand new. It's from the same creator of Closely, the LinkedIn automation tool. Mm-hmm. So hopefully it gets better and better and better. Right now, it's still very rudimentary. But for startups who are listening right now and maybe don't have a $12,000 budget to get some data, might be a good option for some people. But data is great. It's all about how you use it, though, and how clean it is. Talk to me about what you do with the data once you have it. Do you always clean your data, and how do you clean your data?
Yeah, 100%. So the data validation space is really cool. So, you know, any database that has data, you know, data gets old, right? I think the stat is that like data erodes at like 9% monthly. So like, you know, if you have a brand new lead list and the next month, there's going to be a lot of people that, you know, change positions, lose their jobs, whatever it may be. So their emails, their numbers, they can all be gone, right? And so you need to clean your data because, you know, having bad data is what leads to like bounces, and bounces is what leads to bad deliverability. So, you know, data validation is very, very important. And I think even like coming more into like a recession right now, right? A lot more people are going to be losing their jobs. A lot of data is going to start eroding a lot quicker. So data validation is going to be very important coming in these next, you know, 6 to 12 months. And, you know, when you validate data, you know, most people and data validation is like, It's actually really old technology. It's been around for, you know, 10 plus years. And all the tools, they all pretty much do it the same, except like Scrubby, which is the tool we own. And actually, I don't think anyone else does it. So I'll kind of explain what makes it different. But yeah, basically, please. Like all the old tools, they basically are categorizing the data into really like three or four data points, which is valid emails, which is obviously what you want to email, catch-all emails, which is basically them saying, hey, I don't know if it's valid or invalid, but you should probably throw it away because it could bounce, right? And most marketers that are smart, they do throw away their catch-alls. And okay. Then you have the invalid, which is, you know, the SMTP pinging back saying it's not valid. So you want to throw this away. And then the fourth one, actually, no, it's just three. I think I was missing one for a little bit. And so, you know, like when you clean a lead list, you're only going to really get like 60% of data if you're lucky, maybe even less, right? Depending on the source as well. And so like, think about like, you know, buying something like ZoomInfo, for example, or buying some expensive database and then, you know, exporting a list and then finding out that you're going to be really email like 50% of the list. That's what happens because you throw away a big chunk of catch-alls because you don't want to risk, you know, it bouncing. And so that's kind of where Scrubby comes in. And so the only way to validate catch-all emails is basically you got to email the catch-all email, right, with burner accounts and basically see if it bounces or not, right? And so what we do with Scrubby is actually we have a huge amount of seed accounts that we're ready to burn, right? And what we do is we actually just email a blank email to the lead list that you upload, and we just catch to see if it bounces or not. And that's how we validate catch-alls. And it's the only way you can validate catch-alls. And so that's kind of the value prop of Scrubby, right? We're like the only software in the market that can actually validate catch-all emails. And so you also kind of have to think about it from the point of view is like most smart marketers, they get rid of the catch-alls because they don't want it to bounce. It's only really like the people that have like really spammy emails that are like, you know, like trying to sell you SEO, digital marketing, you know, those typical emails, right?
Oh, I get them every day.
Yeah. And so now that you have more data, you're also emailing people that never get good cold emails. So when you do send a cold email, it just stands out way more in their inbox. And so that's kind of like the value prop with Scrubby.
So you guys don't even spit out catch-alls. It'll either say valid or invalid, right? Because you're, yeah. I guess, yeah, handling those catch-alls. Wow, that's super interesting. We throw out our catch-alls, and that's probably, you know, hundreds of thousands of data points over the past few years.
Yeah. So, and like in a lot of industries, like you'll find that like 60 to 70% of the catch-alls are actually valid emails.
But, yeah.
You know.
Cool. I'll definitely check that out. And Scrubby is the platform that can do that. Very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. Love that. All right. Let's move on to other aspects of cold email. So we've got the data. We've cleaned it. Now I've got a nice clean data list. Now we got to send these things. So walk me through some of these other tools that we're using.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's sending platforms.
Mm-hmm.
There's creating and warming a sending email address. So we need a software to actually deliver the emails. Then we need a sending account to actually and server to send those emails from.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things you want to do before you even actually send the emails, right? So, you know, a lot of sales teams actually get this wrong, which is funny because, you know, B2B lead gen cold emails is like sales, but like a lot of big sales orgs, they actually all send out of their primary like domain, right? And so all that's doing, right, especially when their sales team is just like, you know, adding the inboxes into their CRM and it's just launching out a ton of cold emails out of their primary domain. All it does is ruin that main domain's deliverability and reputation, right?
Yeah.
So when you cold email, never cold email to your primary domain just so you don't risk it. Like, you know, obviously if you're a massive organization like Amazon or Apple who have built up an insane amount of domain reputation, it's not as important, right? But like, you know, when you're working with smaller organizations that, you know, don't have as like high of a domain reputation as them, it hurts us a lot more whenever we do start ramping out a ton of cold emails. And so, you know, always buy secondary domain and just have that forward over to your primary domain and use that to like do the cold emails out of. And since you're buying like a secondary domain and you still have to do it with your primary domain, really, you just got to really build trust with the ESPs. And the only way to really do that is using a warming software. So warming software, just to kind of give a quick recap for like the listeners, it's basically your email is thrown into like an engagement group. And the engagement group is interacting with your email account to build trust and show engagement. And that's what's going to build, you know, a healthy reputation with the ESPs. And so you want to be able to warm it up for 14 days, you know, mimic like a lot of human activity automatically without having to do anything. And then you want to start sending your cold emails out and start slowly ramping them up.
Right. Funny story about what something that recently happened to our company. Like you said, it's devastating when small businesses' primary domain goes down and our emails between each other and with our clients start to get flagged as spam or flagged as suspicious. And it happened to us. We don't cold email from our primary domain, but half of our team is composed of publicists. And what we didn't realize was they're essentially cold emailing reporters sometimes to pitch our clients. And I guess a couple bad pitches must have gone out. A lot of people flagged it as spam. And now we're on a block list, which we're working our way out of. We know what to do. We made the changes. But it sucks. And it's something that is our third time dealing with it until we finally figured out the culprit and the reason. I'm not going to point any fingers, but it's tough. And the only way out of it is to, again, build domain reputation. So you fix the problem and get into these warming tools until you're finally out of the block list.
Yeah, 100%.
So with warming softwares, about 2 weeks, do you start them at full capacity? I believe the normal range is you want those emails sending like 30 to 50 per day with a 30% open or reply rate, 100% open, 30% reply. Do you start them kind of full speed right away? Do you inch them up? Does it matter? Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So it definitely matters because think of from like the ESP's point of view, right? Like you want to basically be able to mimic normal activity. And so that typically means, starting at like 5 emails per day and then starting to slowly ramp up and creep towards 30 and 40 emails per day. And then in the first 14 weeks, once again, nobody's emailing you or you're never going to send emails at any point and get 100% reply rate. Right. And so putting that reply rate at the very beginning to 100%, it's a little suspicious. And so, have it like what we do for ours is we'll set it up from 5 to 60 and then we'll have it ramp up by 20% and it does that automatically. And so it just mimics normal human behavior. And I believe by the 14th day, when we actually launch the campaign, what we'll do is pull it back. Because right now you have to think about it, right? Like your total inbox volume, right? Because if you're doing warm-up emails, and you're sending 60 warm-up emails, and then you're sending 100 cold emails, your inbox volume is 160 per day. And that's relatively too high because I don't know anyone that sends 160 emails a day, right? And so you want to pull that back and kind of have a good ratio from cold to warm and be able to balance that and find the balance. And that's how you're going to really perfect deliverability while also having a pretty good volume there.
Interesting. And you said your platform will scale up automatically every day, week, whatever you tell it to do. That's helpful. Ours does not. And there's a lot of different, obviously, warming platforms. There's a few different options for tools across the board. That's very helpful. So what does it generally cost to use one of these tools? And do you need to use it forever as your email is sending?
Yeah, great question. So there's a lot of different warming softwares out there. It's actually one of the easier and cheaper things to build in the B2B lead gen space. So you'll see a lot of guys come in and, create one. But the issue is there's tons of different things that go with it, right? So the very cheap ones, for example, right? There's even some that are free. And the thing is that A, they have a very bad seed pool, meaning the other people that are typically in these cheaper warm-up communities are spammers, right? They have bad reputation. And when your inbox is messaging with another inbox that has a ton of, this flag is on a ton of blacklist, things of that sort, there isn't real hard data behind it, but we have good reason to believe that it does affect your deliverability, right? And then there's things of just interacting with other members. It doesn't, because most engagement groups are public, right? And I don't prefer those. I like to have a private network, and then and that's what Inboxy is. It's we own all the accounts that are interacting with yours, and then we're assigning accounts dedicated to yours. It's not interacting with anybody else's. And so things like that kind of improve your seed network, your pool, and it also will help your deliverability. So there's only two people in the market right now that actually do a private warm-up network, just Inboxy, and then I think the other one is Folderly. And you'll see that we're both priced accordingly because managing a private warm-up network is a little bit harder because we have to own all the email accounts and basically be able to manage those and make sure they are healthy and don't die out because we're dedicating them to your inbox. And so you know, you'll see a little bit higher like deliverability and better deliverability when it comes to things like that. So prices can range anywhere from $0 to $150.
Right. That's actually really helpful because we looked into Folderly and like, why is this one so expensive? That makes a lot more sense. Yeah, so very good.
They have a very good seed pool. Like their seed pool is comprised of like a ton of, you know, Google domains that are completely owned by them. They're not used for outbound activity. And they have a good solid amount of Outlook accounts in there. Like it's a great seed pool. Like if I was not to use Inboxy, I would be definitely using them. Even though it is a little bit more expensive, like it's definitely going to help over like a longer period of time.
Maybe we throw our Otter PR main domain into yours or into Folderly to get out of that block list quicker. Very good.
The other thing too is like if your deliverability goes down, like most people kind of freak out. If you're using your secondary domain, like it's all good. Just throw that one away, get a new one.
Right.
You're up and running again. And you don't even need to throw it away. You can just toss it back into a warm-up pool, right? And what's going to happen is that you're basically, because like in the warm-up pool, you know, they're all designed to mark your email for, like it's supposed to mark your emails as unspam, right? So the spam folder is going in and saying it's not spam. And so that's just going to train, you know, the ESPs to kind of trust and believe in your domains again, right? And it's building like positive interactions. So, you know, for you, for anyone else listening, for everybody, deliverability goes down, just throw it back into a warm-up pool and you're going to be good.
All right, beautiful. I love it. And we've got a few more components to getting good cold emails through. We've got the sending platform and we've got first lines, which is something that we started using relatively recently. So walk me through that. Is there a preferred sending platform? What do you do with it? And is it important which one you choose?
Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of depends on like, what are your campaign objectives, right? Because I know a lot of people that have like very big LTVs, right? And a lot of like their entire market is extremely small, right? And in some of those cases, it makes sense to just use like a one-off platform like Lemlist or Mailshake and kind of do the emails like a little bit more manually and not like really look to scale the outreach. Yeah. But in most cases, like especially if you're like a B2B like demand gen agency like we are, like a lot of our clients are coming to us just like automate the entire process, right? They just want to, you know, their markets are huge and they want to get as many messages as they can. And tools like Emmy, Instantly, Quickmail, those are going to be your go-tos. And the reason why is because you're able to add, you know, unlimited amount of inboxes into there and rotate through those inboxes. So you're able to keep your inbox volume low, right? And kind of mimic that human activity by just bringing it all the way down, but be able to still scale your volume because you're adding so many inboxes. And so I think it kind of depends on campaign performance and kind of like how big your TAM is and stuff. But I would say in most cases, like I would probably use something that can rotate inboxes because it's just going to like scale your outreach while also keeping like really good deliverability. And when it comes to campaign performance, those are like the fundamentals. Like those are the building blocks. If you can get those two things down, like everything else gets way easier.
Yep, I agree with you. I must have been through 6 different email sending tools and platforms. All of them are a little bit different. Mm-hmm. I always feel like I'm missing out on, you know, the best one that somebody starts using and recommends to me. Like Growbots.io is one. Someone's like, you got to be using Growbots. We recently just switched to Instantly. Before that, it was Snovio. So always making new moves. But I agree with you. Being able to rotate through inboxes is huge for scaling. So if you plan on, you know, sending from 50, 100 email addresses, being able to plug that into a few different campaigns instead of 50 to 100 different campaigns, which makes it much, much easier, smoother. And I got to check out your tool, but Instantly seems to be doing a great job building out new features and things like that.
Their founding team is amazing. I was actually supposed to have a call with them earlier today, but I actually had to cancel on them. But they're great guys. I love them.
Yeah. Another fun story. I guess it was today or yesterday where they added the new feature where under email accounts, it just shows you what records are missing. And your records probably aren't missing. But our marketing assistant's been the one setting up the email addresses. And they were all missing a DMARC record. We're like, why is nobody replying? Because probably when those emails are going through, they get a big old flag that says, looks suspicious.
Yes.
There's no DMARC record. So instantly, I woke up this morning and I had a bunch of red notifications that all the DMARC records are missing. So it's amazing. And like one little piece of information, one little move, we're probably going to, you know, fix that overnight.
Yeah. I actually have something to tag along onto that as well. So we had this new inbox manager who came in and, you know, our inbox managers are in charge of setting up the inboxes, you know, setting up the DNS, putting in the DMARC records and all of everything there. And so we started that campaign. Response rates were a little bit lower than usual. And we were also wondering, like, hey, what's going on? So I go check the DNS records. Everything's looking great. And then, you know, I'm like, you know, I still can't figure out, like, what's going on, right? And, like, the offer is very solid. Copywriting's good. Like, we've had clients in the space before. We've done great. But still things are, like, you know, not looking too great. And then I look and I see that there's a space between. So the DMARC record, I think it's, like, equals DMARC or something like that, value E, yeah, or something like that, whatever that language is, right? Whatever it's there. And there was just a space between, like, the equal sign and the next word. And that's what was causing the DMARC records to all fail down the books. And so,
isn't it wild how one little thing like that, yeah, can, like, ruin your whole marketing campaign? You're like, oh, I wonder what's wrong, because it can be so many things wrong.
Yeah.
And it's funny how simple little mistakes like that can screw up everything for a long period of time before it gets noticed. We implemented recently is a DMARC reporting tool. We plug all our domains into this DMARC reporting tool. It monitors them, sends us a weekly report. Just to let us know what's going on. And if something screws up, it tells us. But man, it's crazy that over the past 3 weeks, the reply rates have been down. I'm like, all right, maybe it's the data. Maybe it's the messaging. Maybe it's the leads. Maybe Instantly is having some issues. But no, it's the freaking DMARC record got screwed up. Wild.
Yeah, 100%. And the other thing, too, is, like, a lot of these reporting tools that do the DMARC stuff, they're all kind of, like, in and out. Like, and this is something you'll notice a lot in the B2B lead gen space, is, like, especially with, like, sales tech, is that a lot of it is, like reporting and stuff is not what it needs to be. Like you might have the reply rate at some number and it could be completely, like, underreported in the tool. And so you really got to kind of look at, like, the actual inbox level. Like, you got to go into the inbox and kind of do it manually to kind of see if, like, the tool you're using is, like, super accurate. And so whenever you're working with new, like, tech stack, even ours, like, do the due diligence, like, kind of go into the inbox and kind of look at it at a really granular level. Cause, like, a lot of that can impact your campaign performance.
Right.
Like, even with, like in that situation I had, like, a lot, I think we were using MX Toolbox or one of these other tools to kind of report on the DMARC. Or I think we were using MailGenius, and it said the DMARC record was good. And then I, like, the real way to check is, like, you can look into, like, in your mailing, where I can't remember where it is in the mail.
Like, Postmaster. I think, I don't know. There's a lot of,
you can, like, kind of check at it. Like, on the actual emails that are sent out, like, you can actually see it, in the sign by, mail by kind of, like, status in that area around there. You can see a lot of your DNS and make sure it's, like, you know, set up correctly there. And so that's how I was able to tell, like, okay, it's actually not set up correctly. Let me go set this up correctly. And so,
crazy how technical it gets when you really dig into it. It's wild. Yeah,
there's a ton of stuff. I'm still learning every day. Like, there's still tiny things. I mean, I'm sure there's things I'm saying incorrectly, but I'll figure it out, that, you know, how to fix it and, you know, learn a lot of things along the way.
It's the life of a digital market. It's always changing, evolving, always gotta stay learning and figuring this stuff out. Mm-hmm. All right, so we talked DMARC records. Sorry for everyone listening if that got a little technical and boring. It's really interesting once you start picking it up and trying to diagnose what's going on with your campaigns, and you're really getting technical with it when you're monitoring a lot of different domains. Eventually, you got to know this stuff. And really, there's not a lot of experts out there that you can hit up to talk you through DMARC records. We recently found one who's been the one kind of walking us through this stuff. But, man, there's not a lot of good help out there. So you're lucky to have found me and Nick. So let's talk a little bit about the kind of the most important part of email marketing, which is, what are you saying in the email that's going to get them to open that email and reply to it? And I know first lines are a part of it, and let's discuss that. But let's also discuss kind of overall strategy with what the goal of that copy in the email is, because it's very different than normal ad copy. It's very different than website copy. The objective is a little bit different. So walk us through how you generally come up with that.
Yeah. So a lot of people, like, the big fad right now is, like, you know, first line personalization, AI, human based, whatever it is. Right. And basically first line personalization is just making the emails individually unique and personalized to the prospect. And, like, in a lot of cases, it's great. Like, it's never going to be a bad thing, but in some cases you really don't need it. Right. Because there's other things that you can use to personalize at scale. Right. Like pulling in data points like the city, right, and mentioning something about the city. Like, before I built QuickLens, I used to send out cold emails to other marketing agencies pitching them on B2B lead gen. And I would say things like, hey, first name, saw that you're located in city, right? And I put that merge field in, you know, huge fan of, and then I put the correlating sports team. And we actually built that into QuickLines, right? Right. And so there's ways to personalize at scale. So, you know, don't stress too much on the first line personalization kind of thing. But if you look at like any great cold email, it usually has like three things, right? Has a great TTA, has a great case study, and then there's like some kind of commonality in it. I think Alex Berman is the one who coined the term like the three C's of a cold email, right? And so if you can have like those three, oh, you know what it is? It's a compliment, CTA, and then case study. If you do all three of those things, those are generally the best types of cold emails, right? And one thing I've also noticed over like doing a lot of cold emails is that, you know, if you're sending cold emails back in the day, kind of pitching like straight to a meeting, you probably get it and have a way higher appointment set rate. But now, you know, a lot of things, I think our lowest performing CTA right now is pushing people straight to a meeting, right? And so we like to kind of keep it open-ended, have like a question-based CTA, right? Where we're saying something of like, hey, is this something you'd be interested in? Something where they could just reply back saying yes or no, and make it much easier on them, right? Because where I think a lot of people mess up is they're trying to set the meeting off that first cold email, when in reality, you want to optimize for a response so that you can convert that response into a meeting. And so that's where we like take that to the next level with like Emmy and stuff.
Okay, super interesting. So personalization is a big first one, a first line, a case study that's probably relevant to them. I don't know, do you just pile all the digital market? I guess you're advertising strictly to digital marketing agencies. Like for us in PR, we advertise to a lot of different categories. So we try and break our campaigns up by category and use a relevant case study in that email campaign. Is that generally what you guys do, or do you advertise specifically to, you know, one category?
Yeah, no, definitely break it up into multiple campaigns and, you know, have multiple verticals we go after. I mean, like for us, like our TAM is pretty big. Like, I mean, we could really service, you know, a majority of companies in the B2B space. And so we'll break, just like you said, right, create multiple campaigns in multiple industries and kind of like see how it works. And that's where Ocean comes really like in hand, right? Because like you have a great case study in the digital marketing space.
Yeah.
Plug them in, get a whole bunch of accounts, and now you have your whole entire campaign lead list strategy for, you know, digital marketing agencies, right? And it's the same thing with like fintech, or like we even ran campaigns, like some of our like super niche campaigns. Like we were able to scrape like a whole bunch of like photography studios, which is kind of hard to kind of like build a list of that in like,
yeah,
like most databases. And like those campaigns do really well, because then you can make like super like specific copy. You can say things like, hey, first name, saw that you are a photography studio, and then kind of go into your gist of the cold email, right? And like things like that, like being a little bit more personalized on like those little tiny things helps you stand out. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I go about the copy. Try to make it really easy, easy to answer, things like of that sort. And then another thing too is like in Emmy, we have this feature called subsequences, right? And so what a subsequence is, I mean, like if you look at your cold emails, right, there's four types of responses that you're always going to get. People wanting to get on a demo, people wanting more information, people telling you to reach out at a later time, or people saying, you know, to reach out to someone else in their department, right? And so right. In Emmy, we build these things called subsequences, which basically are like, you can create a sequence that addresses each one of those like kind of like responses. And so when you do get the response from your initial cadence, and let's say someone responds to that initial cadence saying, yeah, I'd love more information before I hop on a call, then you could just put them into that info sequence, and that info sequence will reply to their email, give them the information because you built that cadence out, and then follow up with them, pushing them towards a demo. And so we're optimizing our initial cadence to kind of just get a response so that we can use the nurture sequences and the subsequences to convert those regular responses into actual demos. And so that's kind of like the process that I've seen that's been working like crazy recently.
Very interesting. Yeah, we usually ask for the meeting right in that first email. So you found more success with kind of leaving it open-ended. Like, is this something you'd be interested in?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, I think Gong did a whole entire study on it. So Gong is like a huge analytics sales tool. And I believe they even published that like pushing towards a meeting is their lowest performing CTA in like just the sales industry. And so I think that kind of like piqued my interest, and I was like, all right, let's try something else in terms of CTAs. And so, yeah, usually we're just asking like if they like more information, or, you know, if they're interested in hearing more, things like that. Those are like our favorite CTAs, rather than saying, hey, are you free at 3 p.m. Just talk about XYZ, things like that.
That's super helpful and tactical for me. That's why I love jumping on these interviews and learning a lot for what I'm going to implement in my own company. So awesome. So CTA is obviously a huge part of converting on a cold email. Another one, that's assuming that they open it, right?
Yeah.
You see an email from someone you don't know. First question is, are you going to open that thing or not? Second is, are you going to reply or not? So how would you say is a tactical way to get somebody to actually open the email?
Mm-hmm. So it's funny because I see a lot of people like speak a lot about like subject lines and how to create the best like subject line. But like, I feel like in most B2B sales, like industries, like I've never, like the subject line I usually stay like use every single time is quick question and thoughts. Like those two work the best and they're just like stable. So I never really stress too much about the subject line. And I don't even stress too much about open rate either. Cause like, if you think about it, open rate's kind of like, it's kind of old. Like it's not really a relevant metric to kind of grade your cold emails on. Cause like, let's say for example, you're emailing an industry that just isn't on their emails. Let's say contractors, for example. Contractors aren't like, especially like the ones that are like self-employed or, you know, have less than 10 employees, they're never on their email. They're usually always on their phones, right? And so if you do a cold email, you can have perfect deliverability, you know, the greatest subject line. You can literally put their phone number in the subject line and your open rate still may be low, right? And it doesn't mean that your cold email is bad. It's just that it's not the best medium to reach contractors, right? And so I never stress too much about open rate. We track something else called IPS, which is like inbox placement score. Because at the end of the day, like we want to like guarantee that our inboxes are hitting their like primary inbox rather than their spam folder. And so that's what IPS tracks. So
how do you do that? Like,
yeah. So basically in Emmy, we send or it automatically sends an email to like 10 seed accounts that we own. And then we're basically just seeing where that email lands in the primary folder or not. So let's say it sends 10 emails and all 10 go into the primary folder of the seed accounts. We know that the deliverability is good. The IPS is, you know, a 100, right? Which is great.
Let's say that like, similar data that you would get from a warming tool that's going to say how many emails were saved from spam, how many were in the inbox?
Yes. Okay, yeah, 100%. Cool. Yeah, exactly. It's like literally that exact same technology just built into an email tool, email signing platform, so that you can kind of see like where your deliverability is going to be. So that we grade all of our inboxes on IPS and then send accordingly. Like if our IPS is below like 70 or 80, then we know we probably shouldn't be doing too much of the sending and kind of like, you know, nurse that one back to health. So we'll put it back into the warm up.
Cool. Do you use any variables in the subject line, like quick question for name, quick question about company, or do you just kind of leave it real simple and then rely on your first line? Because they're going to see the subject line and the first line of that email before they actually open it. So yeah, what do you do to...
Yeah, so like, it sometimes what we'll do in the subject line is put like, cause like one thing you have to realize, especially when you're doing cold emails is like, you don't want your emails to be the same every single time. Cause like, think about it, right? Like in the terms of the what is it? The email sending platforms, right? Or the, I blanked on the name, but Google, Microsoft, they're going to look at each inbox and it's really suspicious when each inbox has, you know, the exact same email being sent out. Right. So you have to incorporate spin tags into your cold emails. And so, what we're doing is we want to put like names and stuff like that before quick question in the subject line. So each email just continuously keeps looking different. And then we'll incorporate spin tags throughout like the actual body of the email to make it once again, just look completely different. So that's kind of like the thought process there. And then with quick lines, you know, obviously we do the AI personalization. Someone walked in. With quick lines, we'll do like the AI personalization. To just kind of stand out once again, send personalizable emails at scale. We try to make ours like very like not intrusive and like not make any like very personalized bold claims. Cause like a lot of AI platforms out there, you know, they'll say things that just don't sound normal. Right. And so we always are going for like the less personalized, but very consistent. Like that's the value prop of quick lines. We want to send like very personalized quick line or personalized lines. You know, they may not be as personalized, but they're still enough to get the recipient to be like, oh, I think they did some research on me or they did some kind of extra effort. And so that's kind of like what we're doing with quick lines.
Okay. Very cool. So a couple other things about some tactics on getting those emails opened and replied to. Do you do anything like offering a free lunch or a gift or an incentive to get on a meeting or to reply to an email? And I've seen that done a lot and I get that done to me sometimes where they'll buy me a lunch or send me a coffee. And I do feel myself actually more inclined to take that meeting or apply to that email if they do. So is that something that you've ever tried or recommend or see?
Yes, I see it a lot in like a lot of like enterprise sales tech spaces. I don't really see it with a lot of like bootstrap founders. Like, you know, if you raise a ton of money and you have an extra, you know, budget to spend, then 100% go for it. You know, I still think it's a little off-putting whenever someone's like, hey, like I'll give you a gift card to, you know, hop on a demo. And it's like a lot of times I feel like, you know, if you're hopping on a demo, you're only hopping on the demo to get the gift card, not really because you have serious buyer intent, right? So it's kind of like a waste of time as well as kind of a waste of money. That's how I always viewed it. But in terms of like giving things out for free, like in terms of like, you know, I've seen a lot of really successful cold email campaigns where like clients and community is a great example, right? They have a massive Facebook group and they do a ton of cold emails and they're pushing them. And, you know, I think their CTA is something on the lines of like, you know, would you be interested in joining our Facebook group for free, or, you know, joining our Facebook group and network with other entrepreneurs? Like that's a great CTA. It's pushing them into your funnel and you're nurturing them by posting great content in the Facebook group. And once again, you're going to eventually get that sale or that appointment somewhere down the line. So I think like strategies like that are really great. You know, it's something I've always wanted to test. Like, you know, there's ways to send out, because this is my thought process, right? Like with QuickLines, emails look personalized at scale, right? And it's like you plug in QuickLines and you send out, you know, 100,000 emails, 200,000 emails, and you push them all towards, you know, either an opt-in or push them towards like a community or ask them if they want to join a community. Like it's such an easy call to action. Like why would they say no, right? And if you're having like good follow-ups in there as well, I feel like it's such an easy way to like grow a massive community or a massive email list that's like opted in really well, really quickly. So that's something I definitely need to test out in the next like 2 to 3 months.
We've never tried anything like that either, but I can see that being really helpful. I do cold email for other purposes too, like booking guests on my podcast. I do it for promoting other medical brands and supplements. And those reply rates are just absurd compared to like pitching to get on a meeting for my PR company where we get like 1-2% replies. Mm-hmm. Those easier calls to action, like writing for my Rave Doctor blog, get like 10-15% replies, just absurdly more. So I imagine a call to action of joining a Facebook group, joining an email list or receiving something would be much more effective. So that's definitely something I'm going to look into trying as well.
Yeah. And then like even like pushing them to like just, you know, like saying things like one of our favorite CTAs is like, hey, would you like more information before, you know, hopping on a call? Things like that are, you know, it's just so easy for them to say yes, right? And, you know, just
they're not committing to a call. They're just saying, yes, I want more information. Sure. Exactly. I'm interested.
And then like you can use like your subsequences and like, you know, automate the follow-ups to, you know, really nurture and really get them to push towards a demo. And you're just going to see way more, I guess, kind of success in a way doing that.
Yeah. I love that. Great tips. Great advice. Do you do anything for omnichannel? Obviously emailing a cold prospect is one way to get their attention. Do you touch them on any other platforms, SMS, LinkedIn? Do you coordinate those? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I used to be really big on omnichannel. So we used to run, you know, email plus LinkedIn very heavily before LinkedIn kind of pushed their update that limits the amount of outreach you could do there. And so like at one point we connected Expandy and Mailshake together. We would send, you know, or we would do like, I believe 1.4 million zaps a month because you had to connect it using Zapier. And so like, you know, we were heavy into that, but then, yeah, now it's kind of like, we just kind of focus on each channel individually rather than trying to like make it like work really well. Like, you know, being in the sales tech space, like there's really no tool that's going to find you that happy medium of being able to work properly. Cause like, you know, obviously LinkedIn just does not like automation at all. And a lot of the omnichannel softwares, they just mess up so much in terms of the flows and the smart sequences that'll like say, like if this person doesn't open an email, it'll send a connection request. So it's been like, it's been too hard to scale. It's very hard to build. And so I like to just focus on each channel individually. And then even when it comes to like if I was like selling anything B2B lead gen, the two easiest channels to scale, cold calling and cold emailing. Like those are the two that I would definitely go in with. Cause like cold calling, you could find people in foreign countries that have perfect English that, you know, don't cost as much as an American SDR that can literally use a power dialer and get in front of, you know, your target audience all within like a month, right? Same thing with emails. And so two easiest channels to scale, you know, if you have a good product market fit, it's almost impossible not to get like a ton of new clients, ton of new customers every single day.
Cool. Have you seen good results with cold calling?
Yeah, actually, we were about to revamp our cold calling like this week. So one of my friends, he has an ISA team built out, but he's going to let go of some of the ISA callers. And so I was like, hey, bring them over to me. Like, I want to try to ramp it up again. The big thing about cold calling, though, is like, you just got to have strong data, like really, really strong data. Because like, you know, and I mean, once again, it varies according to company size. Like if you're hitting smaller companies, you can call the company phone, you might, you know, be really calling the Google phone number of the CEO, right? But if you're trying to hit bigger organizations, hitting directors at companies that have, you know, 500 plus employees, data is the biggest thing there. And it's extremely hard to get as well as extremely expensive. But if you can afford it, it's definitely worth it. And like a good cold call goes a long way.
Cool. Definitely something I'll look into. I think we tried it once with some agency and didn't have any luck, but.
So the thing is like when you delegate a lot of things to agencies without like testing it first on your own, right? Like truthfully, like a lot of our customers that come to us to like go through the agency that haven't done cold emails, like it's always harder to ramp up and figure out what's going to work because there's so much in that testing stage. And when it comes to like B2B lead gen testing, it takes like 60 days and the sales cycle takes like another 60 days. And so it's hard to like, if you haven't really done a lot of this, to come into an agency and then like really see success of it. But like, let's say you have seen some level of success and then you come into the agency probably has the right tech, the right strategies, the right plan in place. They can just help you scale it up, but they just need to know where to hit and how to hit. And then from there, they can just keep hitting the home runs.
I agree with you. It's like hiring an ads agency. No one's going to do the hard work of testing for you.
Yeah.
Maybe they will at the really high prices, but if you're at that point where you can afford it, you might as well experiment on your own because it does take a long time to get the messaging dialed in, to get the product dialed in, the data dialed in. So I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, like most agencies are built to be like very productized, right? Like they want to be able to bring someone in and have a system that's like pretty much plug and play and not make too many changes. And so you got to kind of find the right balance when you like hire an agency and try to see. And that's why like with a lot of tech coming out nowadays, it's very easy to build out custom strategies, but like make them very like plug and play. Like we used to have to do the leadless strategy and like look at every contact individually, but now with Ocean, it's like pretty much automated. So that's helped our business and our agency just be able to kind of be a little bit more productized, but still deliver phenomenal results and build a phenomenal lead list and stuff.
Yeah, that's so cool. Finishing up here, talk to me about some ninja tactics, some secret weapons that you think you have used and have recommended to other entrepreneurs that are just game changers that most people wouldn't know.
Yeah, so if you have access to a ton of data, so a ton of emails that are like right in your ICP and you want to cold email them, and you have like a very strong offer, you know, like everything, like you basically have everything working. The only thing that's kind of like holding you back is you can't scale the volume and you're at that point and you want to scale the volume. The hidden secret right there is SendGrid. So SendGrid is it's basically an SMTP and it'll allow you to send, you know, 100,000 emails a month for $30. You know, it can't get cheaper than that. Right. But the issue there is, you know, they technically don't want you to send cold emails. And so, you know, if they notice, you know, you're having a lot of bounces or, you know, you're having a lot of bad engagement towards your email, they'll, you know, push you off of their shared IP and tell you to get onto their dedicated IP. But what we've noticed is like, if you have like a very high, like for example, there's only two warm-up softwares that can do this, Inboxy being one of them. If you could get Inboxy to warm up the SMTP on SendGrid with high volume of warm-up emails, because most warm-up emails won't allow you to send more than 100 per day. On Inbox, you can send, I think, like 10,000 per day. And, you know, if you're sending, you know, 100,000 emails and, you know, say you're sending 100,000 emails over a month, that comes out to be, I don't know what that is daily. Like, let's just say you're sending 10,000 emails a day, right? And your warm-up volume is, you know, 1,000 emails per day. That means 10% is, you know, positive interactions, positive engagement. You're able to fly under the radar of SendGrid, and they're never going to, you know, kick you off their shared IP. So it allows you to scale that email outreach, have good deliverability, and be able to kind of coast and, you know, not pay like for a million inboxes. Like I think to send 100,000 emails per month with inboxes right now, that probably cost you like over $2,000 just on the inbox levels.
Yeah.
And so, You know, that, wow. that right there is, it's pretty crazy, but.
Is it sustainable? Right, can you do, you know, 1,000 emails per day per sender account if you're on SendGrid?
Yeah. Cause they built their own SMTP, right? And so mm-hmm. when you build your own SMTP, you don't have like much of the limitations, but the thing is that, you know, they scrutinized a lot harder because they like, if they ruin their IP, like everyone that's using their IP will also suffer, right? So right. they want to make sure that you're not abusing it. And if you're able to have that high level of inbox engagement using something like Inboxy, and it's like, you know, 10% of your total volume, you'll be able to coast and be able to maintain pretty good deliverability. Like we've only done it for about, I think we're on like day 60 to 90, somewhere around there. And it's driving like a good amount of leads every week. And appointments are, you know, calendars are full. So, you know, it's definitely working. Will it work in the next 6 months? Nah, no idea. Will they probably cut us off? Possibly. But right now it's working pretty well.
Wow. Definitely something I'll try. That is an awesome tactic. I thought you were going to say ClickSend, which is a software, I guess they use their own shared servers too. And you can basically link your sender account and send through their servers.
Interesting.
Yeah. We were doing like 10, 20,000 a day, just on there. You have to pay per email, but it's pretty cheap if you buy it in bulk. Mm-hmm.
Was your deliverability good on there or?
It's hit or miss. It used to be really good. Now I don't think it is anymore. They probably ruined their servers. But even sending 20,000 emails to spam every day, eventually people are going to open those things.
Yeah, I was going to say that as well. Like, you know, you'll get a couple of wins in the spam folder. People will, you know, respond back, you know, showing some kind of interest. So that's
pretty cool. I check my spam every week or so. So checking it.
Yeah, 100%. Other than that, the other, I guess, ninja hack would be like using what's called like avatars on LinkedIn. It's kind of like black hat in a way, but I honestly like, you know, if you're servicing other businesses, helping them grow, doing your thing, like I don't see it as a negative thing, but basically avatars are just like alternative profiles. So it's like, an AI generated profile. You'll see a lot of those on LinkedIn and cool. It basically just allows you to scale your volume on LinkedIn, right? Because on LinkedIn, you're limited. On how many daily actions you can have. And so we'll use avatars. So my co-founder, he runs a LinkedIn automation company called Leah. And on Leah, it can create these automated profiles and be able to send out the outreach through those profiles and stuff. And so he'll make them super custom. They look really real, but they definitely help a lot when it comes to like sending out more LinkedIn outbound volume.
And I would love for you to send me a list of some of these tools, the Leah, obviously your tech stack I have will be included for the listeners, but that's something I'd be interested in as well. We use a tool called Closely to do our LinkedIn kind of outreach and sending, and it's great, but we're limited, you know, to the real accounts of our team members. So that would be a game changer. It does work. You know, the LinkedIn, the lead generation works a lot.
Being a PR agency, I'm sure you could just do some email outreach or LinkedIn outreach saying like, you know, I'd love to get you featured on XYZ, you know, and, you know, are you open to speaking or, you know, would you want more information or something like that? And I'm sure that prints numbers because everyone wants to get featured.
Yeah, 100%. So hook me up with that software. I'll check it out. Get to work on some of those avatars. Very cool. And thank you for sharing those tactics. I think a lot of the startups and marketers out here, I don't think it's that black hat. If you've got a good product, a good message, and you're doing a good job, you got to get in front of people. You need the attention if you're going to win. And that's what this is about. I appreciate it when I see good offers and good emails and good contacts. I want that information. I want the opportunity to have that service and have that option to scale my company. So don't be shy out there, guys.
Yeah, 100%. And for a lot of the smaller companies out there, like we actually just had a demo with someone who felt like Quick Launch, a little gimmicky. Because it does like, you know, personalization at scale and it's funny, right? Because like every, you know, entrepreneur's dream, every business owner, you know, we want to be the biggest in the space, the best in the space. And you look at some of the biggest companies, you know, in literally America, right? Publicly traded companies, they're using things like avatars. They're using things like quick lines, right? Because we sell them. And so
look at Salesforce. It's one of the biggest SaaS platforms on earth. They built their whole company on cold prospecting.
Yeah. So it's always funny whenever you hear, you know, some people saying that it doesn't work or, you know, they don't want to look off. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, if the bigger companies in the world are going to do it, I'm going to do it as well because I want to be there.
All right, Nick, brother, where can people find you if they want to follow your journey, access you, your expertise, your agency, your tech stack? Where is the best place to do that?
Yeah, so I'm pretty active on Twitter, not as much recently, but pretty active on there, usually tweeting stuff. You can find me at NickAbraham12, I believe. That's where you find me on Twitter. And then look me up on LinkedIn, just type in Nick Abraham, Leadbird, and I'll probably pop up somewhere. And so, yeah, those are probably like my two best places to find me.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming on and spending some time with me, brother, talking about a topic that I have come to love over the years and that I value at, you know, creating my business and helping us scale our company. If it weren't for cold email, I don't think we'd be where we are today. And you're one of the few experts that I've met in my years doing this, that knows more than I do. So thank you for coming on and having this fun conversation with me. And I hope to continue it.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me on.